Chapter 38. A Sudden Chill. The blazing sun still climbed behind him, and Matt was glad his broad-brimmed hat gave a little shade on his face. This Altaran forest was winter bare and more than winter brown, with pines and leatherleafs and other evergreens looking sere, and oak and ash and sweetgum naked. Noon yet to come, the worst heat beyond that, and already the day was like riding through an oven. His coat was slung atop his saddlebags, but sweat made his fine linen shirt cling. Pips's hooves crunched on dead ferns and fallen leaves thick atop the leaf mold, and the band moved in a crackle from the forest floor. Few birds appeared, quick flashes between the branches, and not a squirrel. There were flies, though, and bite-me's, as if this were the heart of summer instead of less than a month to the Feast of Lights. No different from what he had seen back on the Aranin, really, but finding it here, too, made him uneasy. Was the whole world really burning up? Avienda strode along beside Pips with her bundle on her back, apparently unconcerned by dying trees or biting flies, and making considerably less noise than the horse, despite her skirts. Her eyes scanned the surrounding trees, as though she did not trust the band's scouts and flankers to keep them out of an ambush. She had not accepted a ride once, which he had not expected anyway, seeing how Aiel felt about riding. But she had made no trouble either, unless sharpening her knife every time they halted could be considered provocative. There had been the incident with Alvar, of course. Riding the high-stepping gray gelding, Matt had found him among the remounts. Alvar kept a wary eye on her. He had tried to stick his belt knife in her the second night, shouting about Aiel killing his father. Of course, she only took it away from him, but even after Matt cuffed him and tried to explain the difference between Shido and other Aiel, something Matt was not all that sure he understood himself, Alvar glared at her constantly. He did not like Aiel. For Avienda's part, Alvar seemed to make her uneasy, which Matt did not understand at all. The trees stood tall enough to have allowed a breeze to stir under the sparse canopy overhead, but the red hand banner hung limp, and so did the two he had dug out once Rand put them through that gateway into a night-covered meadow. A dragon banner, the red and gold shape hidden in the white folds, and one of those the band called Althor's banner, the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, also thankfully wrapped inside. A grizzled senior bannerman had the red hand, a fellow with narrow eyes and more scars than Darrett, who insisted on actually carrying the banner a part of each day, which few bannermen did. Talmanis and Darrett had supplied second squadmen for the other two, fresh-faced young men who had shown themselves steady enough for a little responsibility. 3 days they had come across Altara, 3 days in forest without sight of a single dragon sworn, or anyone else for that matter, and Matt hoped to stretch their loneliness at least through this fourth before reaching Saladar. Aside from Aes Sedai, there was the problem of how to keep Avienda from Elaine's throat. He had few doubts why she kept sharpening that knife. The edge glittered like gemstones. He was very much afraid he was going to end taking the Aiel woman to Camelin under guard, with the bloody daughter heir demanding he hang her every step of the way. Rand and his bloody women. In Matt's view, anything that slowed the band and kept him from the stew he expected in Saladar was to the good. Halting early and marching late helped. So did the supply wagons at the rear, slow as they were in the forest. But the band could ride only so slowly. All too soon, Vannin was sure to find something. As if thinking his name had been a summons, the fat scout appeared through the trees ahead with 4 riders. He had gone out before dawn with 6. Matt raised a clenched fist, signaling a halt, and murmurs passed down the column. His first order on leaving the gateway had been no drums, no trumpets, no flutes, and no bloody singing. And if there had been a few glum faces in the beginning, after the first day in that wooded terrain, where you could never see clearly more than 100 paces and seldom so far, no one objected at all. Resting his spear across his saddle, Matt waited until Vannin pulled up and casually knuckled his forehead. "You found them?" The balding man leaned to one side in his saddle to spit through a gap in his teeth. He was sweating so much he looked to be melting.
"I found them, 8 or 10 miles west. There's warders in those woods. I saw one take Mar, Just came out nothing in one of those cloaks and swept him out of the saddle. Roughed him considerably, but didn't kill him, though. I expect Ladwin didn't show up for the same reason. So they know we're here. Matt breathed heavily through his nose. He did not expect either man would hold back anything from Waters, much less Aes Sedai. But then the Aes Sedai had to know sooner or later. He had just wanted it to be later. He slapped at a blue fly, but it buzzed away, leaving a spot of blood on his wrist. How many? Vannin spat again. More than I ever figured to see. I got into the village afoot, and there was Aes Sedai faces all over. 200, 300 maybe. Maybe 4. I didn't want to be too obvious counting. Before that shock had time to settle, the man delivered another. They got an army, too. Camped to the north, mainly. More than you got. Maybe twice as many.
Talmanis and Elysian and Derrid had ridden up during that, sweating and swatting flies and bite-me's.
Did you hear? Matt asked, and they nodded soberly. His battle luck was all very well, yet being outnumbered 2-1 with hundreds of Aes Sedai thrown into the bargain could strain any luck.
We aren't here to fight, he reminded them, but their long faces remained.
For that matter, the remark did not make him feel better either. What counted was whether the Aes Sedai wanted this army of theirs to fight.
Prepare the band to be attacked, he ordered. Clear as much ground as you can and use the logs to make barricades.
Talmanis grimaced nearly as hard as Nalesian. They liked to be in the saddle and moving when they fought.
Think! There may be warders watching us right now.
He was surprised to see Vannin nod and glance off to their right in a significant way.
If they see us readying to defend, then plainly we don't mean to attack. It might make them decide to leave us alone, and if it doesn't, at least we're ready.
That got through to Talmanis faster than Elysian. Derrid had been nodding from the start. Giving his oiled beard a twist, Nalesian muttered,
What do you intend to do, then? Just sit and wait for them?
That's what you're going to do, Matt told him.
Burn Rand and his maybe 50 Aes Sedai. Burn him and his loom a little. Intimidate them.
Waiting right there until somebody came out from the village to ask who they were and what they wanted seemed a very good idea. No Taviran twisting this time. Any battle was going to have to come to him. He was not about to walk into it.
They are that way, Avienda said, pointing.
Without waiting for an answer, she settled her bundle on her back and began striding west. Matt stared after her.
Bloody Aiel.
Some warder would probably try to take her, too, and have his head handed to him. Or maybe not, warders being warders. If she tried to put a knife in one of those, he might just hurt her. Besides which, if she got to Elaine and began hair-pulling over Rand, or worse, stuck a knife in her... She was moving along quickly, almost trotting, eager to reach Saladar.
Blood and bloody ashes.
Talmanis, you have the command until I get back, but you don't stir unless somebody jumps on the band with both boots. These four will tell you what you might have to face. Vannin, you're with me. Alvar, stay close to Derrid in case he needs messages carried. You can teach him to play snakes and foxes, he added with a grin at Derrid. He tells me he'd like to learn.
Derrid's jaw dropped, but Matt had already moved on. A fine thing if he ended up hauled into Saladar by a warder with a lump on his head. How to reduce the chance of that? The banners caught his eye.
You stay here, he told the grizzled bannerman. You other two come with me, and keep those things furled.
His strange little party caught up to Avienda quickly. If anything could convince the warders to let them through unhindered, one look should. No threat in a woman and four men, and obviously making no effort to avoid notice. Not carrying two banners. He checked the second squadman. There was still no breeze, but they held the banners clutched to the staffs. Their faces were tight. Only a fool would want to ride in among Aes Sedai and have those spread in a sudden breeze. Avienda glanced at him sideways, then tried to push his boot out of the stirrup.
"Let me up," she ordered curtly.
Why, under the light, did she want to ride now? Well, he was not going to have her scrambling up and very likely knocking him out of the saddle in the process. He had seen Aiel get on a horse once or twice. Slapping another fly, he leaned down and caught her hand.
"Hold on,"
he said, and heaved her up behind him with a grunt. She was nearly as tall as he was, and solid to boot.
"Just put your arm around my waist."
She only gave him a look and twisted about awkwardly until she sat astride, legs bared above the knee, and not at all concerned with it. Nice legs, but he would not have involved himself with another Aiel woman, even if she was not moonstruck over Rand. After a time, she spoke to his back.
"The boy, Alvar. The Shido killed his father?"
Matt nodded without looking around at her. Would he even see any warders before it was too late? Leading the way, Vanenrode slumped like a sack of suet, as always, but he had a sharp eye out.
"His mother died of hunger?" Avienda asked.
"That or maybe sickness."
Warders wore those cloaks that could blend into anything. You could walk past one without seeing him.
"Alvar wasn't too clear, and I didn't press him. He buried her himself."
"Why? You think you owe him something since Aiel cost him his family?"
"Oh?"
She sounded startled.
"I killed neither, and if I had, they were tree killers. How would I have toe?"
Without a pause, she went on, as if continuing in the same line.
"You do not care for him properly, Matt Cawthon. I know men know nothing about raising children, but he is too young to spend all of his time with grown men."
Matt did look at her then, and blinked. She had her head kerchief off and was busily running a polished greenstone comb through her dark reddish hair. That seemed to be taking all her concentration, that and not falling off. She had donned an intricately worked silver necklace, too, and a wide bracelet of carved ivory. Shaking his head, he went back to studying the forest. Aiel or not, they were all alike in some ways.
"If the world is ending, a woman will want time to fix her hair. If the world's ending, a woman will take time to tell a man something he's done wrong."
It would have been enough to make him chuckle, if he was not so busy wondering whether warders were watching him right that moment. The sun climbed to its zenith and tipped over by the time the forest gave way abruptly. Fewer than 100 paces of cleared ground separated trees from village, and the ground looked as if it had not been cleared long. Saladar itself was a considerable village of gray stone buildings and thatched roofs, and the streets were full and busy. Matt shrugged into his coat. The finest green wool, embroidered with gold on cuffs and tall collar, it should be good enough to meet Aes Sedai in. He left it hanging open, though. Even for Aes Sedai, he would not die from heat. No one tried to stop him as they rode in, but people paused, and every eye turned to him and his strange little company. They knew, all right. Everyone knew. He gave up counting Aes Sedai faces after reaching 50. That number was reached too quickly for any peace of mind. There were no soldiers in the crowd, unless you counted warders, some in those color-shifting cloaks, some fingering a sword hilt as they watched him pass. No soldiers in the village simply meant they were all in the camps, Vanen had mentioned. And all the soldiers being in the camps meant they were ready to do something. Matt hoped Talmanis was holding to his instructions. Talmanis had some sense, but he could be almost as eager to go off and charge somebody as Nalesian. He would have left Darrett in charge. Darrett had seen too many battles to be eager, but the nobleman would never have stood for it. There did not seem to be any flies in Saladar either.
Maybe they know something I don't.
A woman caught his eye, a pretty woman in odd clothes, wide yellow trousers and a short white coat, her golden hair in an elaborate braid to her waist. She was carrying a bow, of all things. Not many women took up the bow. She saw him looking and ducked down a narrow alleyway. Something about her tickled his memory, but he could not say what. That was one trouble with all those old memories. He was always seeing people who reminded him of somebody who turned out to be 1,000 years dead when he finally figured it out. Maybe he had even really seen somebody who looked like her. Those holes in what he remembered of his own life were fuzzy around the edges. Probably another hunter for the horn, he thought wryly, and put her out of his head. There was no point in riding about until somebody spoke, because it seemed nobody was going to. Matt reined in and nodded to a thin, dark-haired woman who looked up at him, coolly questioning. Pretty, but too skinny for his taste, even without that ageless face. Who wanted to be poked by bones every time you gave a hug? "My name is Matt Cawthon," he said neutrally. If she wanted bowing and scraping, she could take a leap, but antagonizing her would just be foolish. "I'm looking for Elaine Trakand and Egwene Alvear, and Nynaeve Almira, I suppose." Rand had not mentioned her, but she had gone off with Elaine, he knew. The Aes Sedai blinked in surprise, yet serenity returned in a flash. She studied him and the others one by one, pausing on Avienda. Then looked at the squadmen so long, Matt wondered whether she could see the dragon and the black and white disc through the folded cloth. "Follow me," she said finally. "I will see whether the Ammerlin seat can see you." Gathering her skirts, she started up the street. As Matt heeled Pips to follow, Vannon let his dun drop back and muttered, "Asking Aes Sedai for anything is never a good notion. I could have shown you where to go." He jerked his head toward a 3-story stone cube ahead. "They call it the Little Tower." Matt shrugged uneasily. The Little Tower? And they had somebody here they called the Ammerlin Seat? He doubted the woman had meant Elida. Rand was wrong again. This lot were not frightened. They were too puffed up crazy to be frightened. In front of the stone cube, the skinny Aes Sedai said peremptorily, "Wait here," and vanished inside. Avienda slipped to the ground, and Matt followed quickly, ready to grab her if she tried to dart away. Even if it cost him a little blood, he was not going to let her run off and slit Elaine's throat before he even had a chance to talk to this so-called Ammerlin. But she only stood there, staring straight ahead with her hands folded at her waist and shawl looped over her elbows. She looked completely at her ease, but he thought she might well be terrified out of her skull. If she had any sense, she was. They had collected a crowd. Aes Sedai had begun gathering, closing them in against the front of their little tower, silently peering at him, and the arc of women thickened the longer he stood there. Actually, they seemed to peer at Avienda as much as him, but he felt all of those cool, unreadable gazes. He barely stopped himself from fingering the silver fox head hanging beneath his shirt. A plain-faced Aes Sedai pushed to the front of the crowd, leading a slender young woman in white with big eyes. He vaguely remembered Anaya, but she hardly seemed interested in him at all. "Are you sure, child?" she asked the novice. The young woman's mouth tightened slightly, but she certainly let no irritation into her voice. "He still seems to glow, or shine. I really do see it. I just don't know why." Anaya gave her a delighted smile. "He's Tavirin, Nicola. You've uncovered your first talent. You can see Tavirin. Now back to the class with you. Quickly. You don't want to fall behind." Nicola bobbed a curtsy, and with a last glance at Matt, burrowed away through the encircling Aes Sedai. Anaya turned her gaze on him then, one of those Aes Sedai gazes that were meant to unsettle a man. It unsettled him right enough. Of course, some Aes Sedai knew about him. Some knew a good deal more than he could wish, and come to think of it, he seemed to remember that Anaya was one of those. But having things announced that way, in front of the light knew how many women with those cool Aes Sedai eyes. His hands stroked the carved haft of his spear. Foxhead or no foxhead, there were enough of them to simply lay hands on him and carry him off. Bloody Aes Sedai. Bloody Rand. He only held Anaya's interest for a moment, though. Stepping up to Avienda, she said, "And what is your name, child?" Her tone was pleasant, but it expected an answer and no delay about it. Avienda faced her squarely, a head taller and using every hair of it. "I am Avienda of the Nine Valleys Sept of the Tardad Aiel." Anaya's mouth quirked toward a smile at the note of defiance. Matt wondered who was going to win that staring match, But before he could make a bet with himself, another Aes Sedai joined them, a woman whose bony-cheeked face gave an impression of age despite smooth cheeks and glossy brown hair.
"Do you be aware you can channel, girl?"
"I am," Avienda said curtly and snapped her mouth shut as if intending to say no more. She concentrated on adjusting her shawl, but she had said enough. Aes Sedai swarmed in around her, crowding Nat away.
"How old are you, child? You have developed much strength, but you could learn very much as a novice. Do many Aiel girls die of a wasting sickness when they are a few years younger than you? How long have you—" "You could—" "You really should—" "You must—"
Nynaeve appeared in the doorway so suddenly she seemed to pop out of the air. Planting her fists on her hips, she stared at Matt.
"What are you doing here, Matrim Cawthon? How did you get here? I suppose it's too much to hope you have anything to do with this army of dragonsworn that's about to descend on us."
"Actually," he said dryly, "I'm in command."
"You—"
Nynaeve stood there with her mouth open, then gave herself a shake, tugging at her blue dress as if it had been disarrayed. It was cut lower than anything he remembered seeing her wear before, low enough to show cleavage, with yellow scrollwork around the neckline and hem. Altogether different from what she had worn back home.
"Well, come with me," she said sharply. "I'll take you to the Ammerlin."
"Matt Cawthon," Avienda called, a touch breathily. She was looking over and around Aes Sedai to find him.
"Matt Cawthon!"
Just that, but for an Aiel, she looked frantic. The Aes Sedai surrounding her kept right on, voices calm, reasonable, and relentless.
"For you, the best thing it is to—"
"You must consider much the best. You can hardly think of—"
Matt grinned. She might pull her knife in a moment, but in that crowd he doubted it would do her much good. She would not be hunting up Elaine any time soon, that was for sure. Wondering whether he would return to find her wearing a white dress, he tossed his spear up to Vannin.
"Lead on, Nynaeve. Let's see this Ammerlin of yours."
She gave him a tight frown and led him inside, tugging at her braid and muttering only partly to herself.
"This is Rand's doing, isn't it? I know it is. Somehow it is. Frightening everybody half out of their wits. You just watch your step, Lord General Cawthon, or I swear you will wish I'd caught you stealing blueberries again. Frightening people. Even a man should have more sense. You stop that grinning, Matt Cawthon. I do not know what she's going to make of this."
There were Aes Sedai at the tables inside. It had the feel of a common room to him, even with those careful Aes Sedai scribbling or handing out orders, but they hardly more than glanced at him and Nynaeve as they crossed the room. It only went to show what a rare show they were running here. An accepted stalking through, muttering to herself, and not one of those Aes Sedai said a word. He had stayed in the tower as short a time as he could manage, but he knew that was not the way Aes Sedai ran things. At the rear of the room, Nynaeve pushed open a door that had seen better days. Everything in the place seemed to have seen better days. Matt followed her in and stopped dead. There was Elaine, pretty as anything with that golden hair, but playing at the grand lady with every inch of her, in green silk with a high lace neck, and one of those condescending smiles and raised eyebrows. And there was Egwene, seated behind a table, a questioning smile on her face, and a seven-striped stole over her pale yellow dress. Taking a quick peek outside, he shoved the door to before any of the Aes Sedai could see in.
"Maybe you think this is funny," he growled, crossing the bit of carpet as fast as he could step. "But they'll have your hide if they find out. They'll never bloody let you go, any of you, if they—"
Snatching the stole from Egwene's neck, he hauled her hurriedly out of the chair, and the silver fox head went dead cold against his chest. Giving Egwene a small shove away from the table, he glared at them. Egwene only looked puzzled, but Nynaeve's mouth was hanging open again, and Elaine's big blue eyes looked ready to pop out onto the floor. One of them had tried to use the power on him. The only good thing that had come out of his trip into that Turangreal was the fox head medallion. He supposed it had to be a Turangreal too, but he was grateful for it just the same. So long as it touched his skin, the one power could not reach him. Not Sayadar, anyway. He had more proof of that than he cared for. It did go cold when someone tried, though. Tossing the stool and his hat onto the table, he sat down, then hiked up from the seat to pull out some cushions and throw them on the floor. He rested a boot on the edge of the table and regarded the fool women.
"You'll need those cushions if this so-called Ammerlin finds out about this little joke of yours."
"Matt," Egwene began in a firm voice, but he cut her off.
"No! If you wanted to talk, you should have talked instead of lashing out with your bloody power. Now you can listen."
"How did you?" Elaine said wonderingly. "The flows just vanished."
At almost the same instant, Nynaeve said in a threatening tone,
"Matt Cawthon, you are making the biggest—"
"I said listen!"
He poked a finger at Elaine.
"You, I'm taking back to Camelin, if I can keep Avienda from killing you. If you don't want that pretty throat slit, you stay close to me and do what I say. No questions."
The finger shifted to Egwene.
"Rand says he'll send you back to the Wise Ones whenever you want, and if what I've seen so far is any indication what you get up to, my advice is to take him up on it now."
"It seems you know how to travel." Egwene gave a little start. "So you can make a gateway to Camelin for the band."
"I don't want any argument, Egwene. And you, Nynaeve, I ought to leave you here, but if you want to come, you can. Only I'm warning you, you yank that braid at me just once, and I swear I'll warm your bottom."
They were staring at him as if he had sprouted horns like a trollic. But at least they were keeping their mouths shut. Maybe he had managed to get a little sense into their heads. Not that they would ever thank him for saving their hides. Oh no, not them. As usual, they would say they would have worked everything out for themselves in just a little while longer. If a woman told you you were interfering when you pulled her out of a dungeon, what would she not say? He drew a deep breath.
"Now, when the poor blind fool they've chosen out for their Ammerlin gets here, I will do the talking. She can't be very bright, or they'd never been able to shove her into the job. Ammerlin seat for a bloody village in the middle of bloody nowhere? You keep your mouth shut and curtsy for all you're worth, and I'll pull your bacon off the coals again."
They just stared. "Good.
I know all about her army, but I have one too. If she's crazy enough to think she can take the tower away from Elida, well, she probably won't risk any losses just to hold on to you three. You make that gateway, Egwene, and I will have you in Camelin tomorrow, the next day latest. And these madwomen can run off and get themselves killed by Elida. Maybe you'll have some company. They cannot all be mad. Rand's willing to offer sanctuary, a curtsy, a quick oath of fealty, and he'll keep Elida from putting their heads on pikes in Tarvalin. They can't ask for better than that. Well, anything to say?"
They did not even blink, as far as he could see. A simple "thank you, Matt," would do. Not a word. Not a blink. A timid tap on the door was followed by a novice, a pretty green-eyed girl who dropped a deep curtsy, all wide-eyed awe.
"I was sent to see if you wanted anything, Mother. For the general, I mean. Wine, or... "No, Tabitha."
Egwene pulled the striped stole from under his hat and settled it on her shoulders. "I want to talk with General Cawthon alone a little longer.
Talshiriam, I will send for her shortly to advise me."
"Close your mouth before you catch flies, Matt," Nynaeve said, in tones of deepest satisfaction.